RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
Western New York race fans, it's time to crank it up.
Start your engine!
For the next hour, the airwaves belong to you. Sit down, strap in, and let's head to WGR's Fast Track.
All right, take a nice big deep breath, buddy.
With your host...
Let's go out there and have a good day, all right, bud?
Dave Buchanan.
Good morning, race fans. 11:05 here on WGR Sports Radio 550. And welcome to another edition of WGR's Fast Track. I'm Dave Buchanan. Thanks for listening, as always. Another fine show lined up for you on this sunny Sunday morning here in Western New York. And hope you have a great one. As NASCAR in California today for the final leg of the West Coast road trip. Today's race out west, the Auto Club 400 at the Auto Club Speedway in Fontana, California. That is on tap for today. Also got NHRA in Gainesville, Florida for the Gator Nationals. We're coming off an exciting weekend last Sunday, of course, with the IndyCar opener at St. Petersburg and a great race at Phoenix, too, for NASCAR as Kevin Harvick winning his third cup race in a row. He'll look to go for a four-race win streak, a rarity in NASCAR, as he will roll off today from the number 10 starting position. Lots to talk about here this morning. We got a great show lineup for you. Coming up in 9 minutes or so, we're actually going to talk to one of the major players in last Sunday's IndyCar opener. Driver for Schmidt-Peterson Motorsports rookie Robert Wickens will join us at 11:15. Robert, of course, winning the pole for last Sunday's race in his first IndyCar start, just the fourth driver in IndyCar history to do so, goes out and leads 69 out of 110 laps and was in contention to win it with two to go until a contact with Alexander Rossi knocked him out of that contention, and the race wound up being handed over to Sebastian Bourdais, who slid by Rossi and Wickens after their contact, and Bourdais drove on to win his second straight IndyCar season opener as he defended his title from last year's race at St. Petersburg. So Robert will join us at 11:15. We'll talk to him about that, and as he looks forward to going through the rest of the 2018 Verizon IndyCar Series schedule. Also, coming up on later in today's show, Kevin Harvick is a big story in NASCAR for his three-race win streak, but he also created a lot of discussion this week based on his post-race comments after the win at Phoenix last Sunday. And he got on a bit of a soapbox rant about short track racing and NASCAR's relationship to it. He and his car owner, Tony Stewart, also chiming in about this. And we're going to play those comments in full in the second segment of our program. And I've got a lot to say about that as someone, of course, who works in the short track racing industry. Very interesting pointed comments from Kevin Harvick this week about NASCAR and the K&N East and West Series and short track racing in general. So we're going to play those comments from Kevin and Tony, and I'm going to talk about that in the second segment. But can't wait to talk about that. That dominated the conversation for most of the week in the NASCAR sphere until the teams got to Phoenix this weekend. Also, some other big NASCAR news this week, however. Jimmy Johnson and Lowe's will be parting ways after this season. Jimmy Johnson or Hendrick Motorsports announcing, I believe it was Thursday, that Lowe's Home Improvement Stores will not be back as the primary sponsor for the 48 car in 2019. And that is shocking. Well, maybe not shocking because they did sign a one-year deal, but still, it's still big, momentous news as Lowe's has been the only primary sponsor on the 48 car since Jimmy started it in 2001. That's 17, 18 years of Lowe's being a primary sponsor. And look at what Jimmy accomplished during those years, 7 NASCAR Cup titles. And obviously the relationship has been iconic. I mean, the 48 Lowe's car ranks right up there with the most iconic number driver sponsor combinations in the sports history. It ranks up there with STP 43 and Richard Petty. It ranks up there with the 3 car and GM Goodrich and Dale Sr. It ranks up there with Dale Jr. and Budweiser in the 8 car or Mountain Dew in the 88 car. It ranks up there with DuPont and Jeff Gordon in the 24 car. Lowe's in the 48 car are iconic for what Jimmy Johnson accomplished driving that car, and the only driver-sponsor combination to win 7 titles, because Richard Petty did not win all his first couple titles, but it was before he had STP on the car. And, of course, Dale Sr. won his first championship, not even with Richard Childers, but when he drove for Rod Osterlund in 1980, and then, of course, won a couple with Wrangler on the car, which is also pretty iconic with the Earnhardt name, and then won the majority of his 7 titles with the black GM Goodrich paint scheme. But Jimmy won all 7 of his championships with Lowe's on the hood of his race car. So, huge announcement. And another big name company leaving the sport of NASCAR, and once again Hendrick Motorsports will be doing some scrambling to get a sponsorship package put together for the 48 team for next season, because gone are the days really of brands like Lowe's sponsoring a race car for 36 races. It is a rarity that one brand sponsors a car for all 36 races in this day and age in NASCAR, the way the business model is for sponsorship. Now, of course, you get the piecemeal sponsorship deals where you've got maybe one brand for 16, 18 races. You got another brand for 10 races, and maybe you got one or two other brands that sponsor a race or two to kind of fill out your season. And so you get the rotating paint schemes and everything. A lot of, you know, the majority of the cars in the field now kind of do that. And Lowe's was still kind of the old school way where Jimmy had the 48. It would change up maybe from week to week. Maybe they'd have some different paint schemes, but it was still always Lowe's the main primary sponsor. So that was huge news this week and really earth-shattering stuff for fans of the 48 and Jimmy Johnson and his future, as he's under contract for 2 more seasons with Hendrick Motorsports. How does this impact his future in the sport? I don't think it's one of those things where Jimmy might lose his ride because of this, but it certainly makes things a little bit more challenging for Hendrick Motorsports to now have to go find sponsorship for that team for next season. Luckily, you've got the greatest active driver in the sport, and so that probably makes it a little bit easier to sell to brands that they're going to be representing someone like Jimmy Johnson. Although, someone that's close to retirement from driving and over 40 years of age, maybe he's not the face certain brands are looking forward to associate with. Maybe they want a younger driver. So obviously, Hendrick will be the folks at Hendrick Motorsports and Jimmy Johnson's people will be working hard to find some new marketing partners for the 2019 season. Other big news surrounding today's NASCAR race, of course, in qualifying on Friday, 13 cars failed to make it through inspection and did not even take time. Only 24 cars took time for qualifying for today's race. They all made the field, of course, because we only had 37 cars show up. But 13 cars, including Denny Hamlin, Clint Bowyer, Eric Almirola, Alex Bowman, William Byron, Daniel Suarez, Chase Elliott, and Jimmy Johnson, are among the cars that did not even take time on Friday. They will start at the rear of the field. But this has forced NASCAR to change their procedures. Cars must start the race on the tires they qualified with. However, it's actually an advantage for the drivers that did not take time, because they would start the race on fresh tires because they never ran a qualifying lap, versus the 24 guys that did go out and qualify. So their tires have some laps on them, and the surface at Auto Club Speedway is worn out. It chews up tires, so it actually puts the teams that failed inspection at an advantage for the start of the race. So NASCAR, for today's race, is allowing the 24 teams that did take time and did go through qualifying, they will be allowed to start the race on brand new tires, just like the other 13 teams that failed inspection. So it is, and this is not the first time we've seen cars, not this many maybe, but cars misqualifying because they could not get through inspection. But this whole deal might come to a head in the coming weeks with NASCAR's inspection process and the teams trying to skirt the rules when it comes to the bodies. Of course, new this year, NASCAR's inspection system for scanning the bodies. It used to be the old templates and laser inspection. Now they've got this new system. They call it the OSS or the Hawkeye system, where they put the car inside a big dark tent, and they have all these fancy computer scanners, and they can do this 3D image that shows where the car does not fit into the rules for certain parts of the body. So it's catching teams even more from that are trying to skirt the rules when it comes to the body. So I think NASCAR and its teams have kind of reached a point here where both sides are fed up, and we could see some further changes to the policy, including a rule that NASCAR implemented for Xfinity Series qualifying, where teams that failed qualifying and started at the rear of the field, not only would they have to start rear at the field, but they would also have to go through a pass-through penalty on the opening lap of the race, which would put them further behind and maybe even a lap down at certain tracks, especially next week when we go to Martinsville. So that rule will likely be implemented for Cup Series qualifying next weekend as well, too. So that will hopefully further deter teams from not getting their cars within the parameters of the rule book and get them prepared for qualifying so that they don't fail inspection multiple times and miss qualifying. But that has been the big story of the weekend so far. Cars that did pass qualifying, though, and the cars that did pass qualifying, it was Martin Truex winning the pole for today's race. He'll roll off first, the defending series champion, looking for his first win of the year. He'll be joined by Kyle Busch on the front row. Then you've got Kyle Larson, who always does well at this track in Fontana, alongside Eric Jones. So the Toyota Gibbs connected cars have three of the top four spots. Row three is Austin Dillon and Joey Logano, who won the Xfinity Series race yesterday. Kurt Busch, Ryan Blaney in row four. Ryan Newman and Kevin Harvick, as I said before, rolling off 10th, looking for his fourth straight win. Brad Keselowski starts 11th. Chris Buescher in 12th. Then you had Bain, Menard, McMurray, Stenhouse, Ty Dillon, DiBenedetto, Wallace, Galding, Reagan, McDowell, Jeffrey Earnhardt, and Reed Sorensen. Those are the 24 cars that did take time on Friday and were able to pass inspection. And then, again, it was Hamlin, Bowyer, Almirola, Bowman, Byron, Suarez, Elliott, Allmendinger, Johnson, Kane, Hill, Chastain, and Witt, the cars that failed. But everybody will start the race on fresh tires today. Again, NASCAR allowing that after pretty much the teams that failed qualifying, they just kind of shrugged their shoulders, said, oh, well, we'll just start the race on fresh tires. So obviously NASCAR knew that would have been an advantage, and that's why they had to go change it up. And then again, further expanding the rules, as I said, with the expansion of Xfinity Series qualifying, with the adding the additional penalty of having to make the pass-through penalty under green if they did fail qualifying, which would obviously put the teams a lap down, if not, you know, close to being a lap down. But it's something that NASCAR's got to work out the balance. I mean, I know when and I talk about this a lot, I'm very black and white when it comes to rules, but you know, obviously in racing, the gray areas of the rule book, our teams try and work in those areas. And a lot of people think that, if, you know, the old adage, if you're not cheating, then you're not winning. But, you know, it's, you got to get the car through tech. You got to be legal in the end. So, I mean, it's kind of pointless to try and have your car fail multiple times going through that pre-qualifying tech. And why risk the further penalties by not having your car be able to qualify for the race, and or at least go through qualifying? I guess that's also part of it, though, too, is with less than a full field of cars showing up, these teams know that even if they do miss qualifying, they're in the race, because there are no cars being bumped from the field, especially if you're one of the 36 cars that owns a charter, you're guaranteed to start. So there's one less deterrent to try and get the car to pass pre-qualifying tech on the first pass, because you know you're kind of locked into the field anyway. So NASCAR has to come up with these new deterrents to get them within the parameters of the rule book so they can take qualifying and qualify for the race. 11:18 here on WGR. We're anticipating hearing from Robert Wickens here shortly. Hopefully he'll be catching up with us soon. He did like our tweet on Twitter, so hopefully he knows he's got to call us. Phone lines are open for you, 803-0551-888-550-2550. You can also send us a tweet, or you can like our tweets too, at FastTrack550. We're on Facebook too, facebook.com/WGRFastTrack. But the IndyCar opener last weekend at St. Petersburg, as we said, Sebastian Bourdais getting the win after the contact between Rossi and Wickens. And what an excellent race, though. Lots of great action. And how about the story of Robert Wickens when he won the pole last weekend? A lot of people were like, Robert Wickens who? Because a rookie driver for Schmidt Peterson Motorsports. So if you weren't aware of his kind of career path to the sport, racing in the development ranks of Formula Racing, and then moving to touring cars for BMW for a couple of years before making the jump to Schmidt Peterson Motorsports. You weren't aware, maybe, of Robert Wickens. So that, I know Jenna Fryer had tweeted out, you know, go Google Robert Wickens to find out more information about him. But then by the end of the race on Sunday, when he had had the contact with Rossi, when he was headed back to the paddock and his car was being towed back to the paddock, fans were actually, you know, chanting his name and showing their support for the job he did, and really impressed everybody with his performance. Not only winning the pole, but leading more laps than anyone, 69 out of 110 laps. Pretty impressive run for Wickens in his first IndyCar start, and as I said, just the fourth driver in IndyCar history to start on the pole in his very first career start, unfortunately coming up short. But great win for Bourdais, as I said, defending his title in this race last year. Graham Rahal finishing second. Rossi did wind up third, as he was able to get around the Wickens car after they made the contact. Wickens unfortunately spun and backed into the wall, but Rossi was able to continue on. And he finished third and did not receive any penalty from IndyCar. James Hinchcliffe, Robert Wickens' teammates, finishing fourth. And then it was Ryan Hunter-Reay rounding out the top five. Scott Dixon, Joseph Newgarden, Ed Jones, Marco Andretti, Will Power rounding out the top 10. The race did get off to a bit of a slow start. They had a handful of cautions within the first, just the first couple laps of the race. A couple of cautions for a handful of incidents. And actually, you know, we talked about all the rookie drivers. And unfortunately, out of all the seven rookies finished 16th or worst. And almost all of them were caught up in an incident of some kind, except for two, Zach Veach and Zach DeMello. But a couple of drivers, including Matthias Leist for A.J. Foyt and Jack Harvey, were caught up in incidents very early on and didn't even get to make 10 laps in their first IndyCar start of the season. So the rookies kind of had a rough day outside of Wickens until his late race run-in. Speaking of IndyCar, some news on, Thursday, because I remember being at the Sabres game seeing this on Twitter. But A.J. Foyt, I don't know if you heard about this, but A.J. Foyt was hospitalized for being attacked by a swarm of Africanized killer bees at his home in Texas. And he's okay. He'll survive. But the more extraordinary point of this story is that this isn't the first time this has happened to A.J. Foyt. This is actually the second time he has been attacked by a swarm of Africanized killer bees. And because of that first attack, he didn't feel the effects of the second attack right away, and it probably made it a lot worse because he didn't feel it happening to him as quickly as maybe the first time it happened to him. So this attack was even worse, and he was hospitalized, unfortunately, because of this. But he'll live. But he was scheduled to, be at the 12 Hours of Sebring this weekend and be the Grand Marshal, and he couldn't make that. But just a crazy story. A guy like A.J. Foyt, one of the greatest American racers of all time. This just image of pure toughness and grit, and a guy that, you know, doesn't take any crap to this day. Even just this image of American toughness, and here he is surviving being stung by a swarm of Africanized killer bees for the second time in his lifetime, which again made it worse. Because I didn't remember hearing about the first time it happened. So when the tweets were coming out that it was the second time he's had to go through this and survive, it was just like, really, twice now? So just good to see that A.J. Foyt Super Tex is okay, but he'll be recovering and not able to be at the 12 Hours of Sebring this weekend, where he was supposed to be the Grand Marshal for the big sports car race down there. Again, 803-0551, 888-550-2550. Unfortunately, we did not hear from Robert Wickens, so hopefully we'll take a break here and see if we can get a hold of him during the break And if not, we'll come back and we'll talk about what Kevin Harvick had to say after the race in Phoenix last Sunday. Again, talking about NASCAR and the grassroots racing level, short track racing. And we'll play all those comments, and then I'll talk about them. If you already have heard the comments and you know what Kevin said and you want to talk about it, feel free to join us, 803-0551, 888-552-550. We get back here on Fast Track on WGR.
Hi, this is Kevin Harvick, driver of the number 4 Jimmy John's Ford. You're listening to WGR Sports Radio 550.
And the 4 car will be looking to go 4 in a row here in the 2018 NASCAR Cup Series season. Kevin Harvick looking for his 4th win of the day at the Fontana, the Auto Club Speedway in Fontana, California. That race coming up at 3, green flag just after 3:45 this afternoon. We won't have it, unfortunately, here on WGR today. We've got NCAA college basketball action here, but be sure to find that on your TV on Fox this afternoon to watch as Kevin Harvick tries for his 4th straight win in the Cup Series. And speaking of Kevin Harvick, after his win last Sunday at Phoenix, he went off on a little bit of a, I won't call it a rant or a tirade. He wasn't shouting or anything, but just had a lot to say about NASCAR and its connection to grassroots local short track racing. And he and Tony Stewart talk about this, mostly about the K&N West Series, but just short track racing in general. He makes, giving you a little context here, you'll hear from Kevin. He kind of refers to Tony, and then you'll hear Tony later on in this clip. He refers to Brian Sperber, who's the president of ISM Raceway, and they're not holding a K&N West Series race at Phoenix ISM Raceway anymore. He talks about that. And Kevin actually ran the K&N West Series season opener on Thursday night at the Kern County Raceway in Bakersfield, California, his hometown, of course, finished 3rd or 4th. He was leading and battling for the lead. There was a little bit of a contact and finished 3rd or 4th on Thursday night. So here is Kevin Harvick and Tony Stewart following last Sunday's win at Phoenix.
You know, I think that needs to be a part of our initiative. Not everybody, you know, a guy like Chase Elliott would love to go run late model races at any late model track in the country instead of going to do an appearance. That's what pushes his buttons. A guy like Jimmy Johnson has no real interest in running any extra races, you know, like a guy like Jeff Gordon didn't. You know, if we could find that niche for, like, I would love to build the K&N West Series back to what it needs to be and that enthusiasm and get to the right racetracks and, you know, help those kids, because for me it was an eye-opener last year when I went to Sonoma and saw the impact that running that race had on the competitors in the series. And you know, the fans will sometimes say, well, you're cherry-picking. Well, I can tell you nobody would know who Will Rogers is if it wasn't for us running that race and being a part of that and having him on the radio show and bringing him to the pit box the next day and these guys taking him in. So if we can shed some light on those particular series and really build them back to where they need to be. And I have so many thoughts on this that, you know, that's just for a different conversation. You know, building everything from the grassroots up. I love the grassroots part of our sport. This guy has been a part of grassroots racing from the sprint cars and midgets. And you know, I've been mad at Sperber here for a couple years now because he won't have the K&N cars come race here because it doesn't help his budget. But in the end, you know, without those grassroots fans and those grassroots people coming and being able to race here, whether it fits your budget or not, 10 years from now, you better hope you have your ass some people that'll sit in the stands up here and wanting to watch these races that are at these short tracks, because those are your hardcore fans and those are your grassroots fans. And you know, one of the best things that happened for racing, it's not just about NASCAR, but one of the best things that used to happen for racing was when we had the Copper Classic here. We had midgets, we had sprint cars. It didn't matter how many people sat in the grandstands, but as competitors, those guys, this was their Daytona. This on the West Coast, this was what we thought our Daytona 500 was. This is where everybody wanted to race. And, you know, it's kicking those guys low on the K&N West Series that they don't get to come and race at this particular racetrack because of the fact that you know, there's a little bit of a pissing contest between, you know, a budget and you know, what is right and what is wrong from a sanctioning fee side on trucks and Xfinity. So they cut the K&N guys out. Cutting the grassroots side of things out is not the right way to do things. Those guys they just want to race. And this is a crown jewel race for those guys. So, you know, it's just the thought process for me is is broken. And you know, when I look at our hardcore fans, they're all sitting at those short tracks and they're mad. They're mad because nobody, you don't have a Winston who is supporting these short tracks like they used to. Winston used to infuse so much money into all these short tracks around the country, and that's what kept it going, and that's what kept people showing up to these racetracks, because there was point funds. But when we had the Copper Classic, you had TV out here, and everybody could get sponsors, and they'd show up to race, and they'd come from all over the country, and they'd show up out here, and there'd be, I don't even know how many sprint cars and midgets, I mean, but there'd be 70, 80 Southwest Tour cars, and you'd have a truck race, and it'd lead off the year. So, I don't know. You know, there's just, I have a lot of things that I think about. I love the grassroots side of things, though.
Yeah. Bob Baer was probably the best at that. I mean, you guys that follow this every week, I mean, you guys remember Bob Baer used to bring in series that I promise you he lost his butt on, and he paid probably more guys tow money to come race at his racetrack than he ever brought back in revenue, but he realized how important it was to the region and how important it was to the teams and drivers. And like Kevin mentioned, I mean, the Copper Classic, I ran second to Mike Bliss here, and that one race got me a huge opportunity to drive for some really big teams. And you know, now you don't have things like that, but we can afford to spend $170 million to move the front stretch from there over to there for, I still have no idea what the hell the reason for that is.
$300,000 doesn't seem like that big.
So yeah, I guess we probably can't afford to run any support races here that cost the track some money.
We'll go to Dominic.
I got it going with the Racing Experts in ESPN Albuquerque for Rodney. Had someone told you a few weeks ago that your driver would win three races in a row, what would you have said?
All right, that is Kevin Harvick and Tony Stewart again talking about short track racing. They allude to the Copper World Classic, which was a big event that Phoenix used to hold back in the day. As Kevin said, midget cars, sprint cars, super modifieds they ran, the West Coast super modifieds, some of the East ISMA guys would go out there, late models. If you go on YouTube, you can find old races. Then he talks about the K&N West Series, and again, the Phoenix, you know, won't bring them back because they don't make money or whatnot, but they can spend all the money to, you know, move the grandstands there at Phoenix. So a lot said there by those guys, and it started a lot of conversation this week about NASCAR and their relationship to the short track racing industry and their relationship with the short track community. And I don't think it's as fractured as some people make it out to be. Yes, there isn't an RJ Reynolds, a Winston that's sponsoring NASCAR short track program and giving those tracks money, but there is still NASCAR's Wheel and All-American Series, and NASCAR still, you know, provides the tracks with, you know, those tracks they get wheel and lighting and uniforms, and I don't know all the financials behind it, but there is still a relationship, but it is maybe not as beneficial to the tracks as the Winston deal was back in the day, but there still is that. And you know, some of the disconnect started with the growth of Saturday night races on the Cup schedule. Before, it was only the Bristol night race, and then you had the All-Star race when that went to under the lights. But then we had almost a third of the schedule being run on Saturday nights, and that impacted some short tracks where fans would stay home to watch the NASCAR race, especially during the big heydays of the late 90s and early 2000s. Fans would choose to stay home instead of going to their short track. They'd stay home and watch the Cup race on TV. I don't think that there is so much of that now, but that was a huge thing, and that probably hurt a lot of tracks too, where fans would stay home, and instead of, you know, Friday, Saturday night going to your short track and then Sunday afternoon sitting on the couch watching the Cup race, Saturday you'd have to make a choice whether to stay on your couch and watch the Cup race or go to your short track. Now I think there is now almost two groups of fans, and this isn't the same for everyone, but now you have a lot of racing fans that are either a NASCAR only type fan that only watch NASCAR racing and they know nothing of maybe the short track that's 20, 30 minutes from the house. And then you have the fan that will only go to the short track races and they refuse to watch NASCAR for whatever reason, whether they don't like the changes NASCAR has made or their favorite driver doesn't compete anymore, whichever it is. You almost have those two type of fans. There's still plenty of fans that are like myself that watch both and are supporters of both. But now you almost have those two separate groups of fans. that are splitting the camps for whatever reason, that they just watch NASCAR or they just go to their local short track. And also you see a lot less of the drivers going back to the short tracks to compete, whether it's for fun because they're being paid to be there or it's because they love short track racing in general. There are still few guys that do it, but you used to get this circuit during the summer months where there was this group that would bring 3-4 drivers to a track. They'd fly them in. They would get 4 street stocks or 4 late models. You know, they get 4 cars, prepare them for the NASCAR drivers in advance, maybe even paint them to look like their cup cars, and the drivers would fly in on a Saturday night, whatever local market they were in for that weekend for a cup race. They would fly in and then show up at a short track Saturday night, do a quick 10-lap exhibition race, and then fly out of there. That program also has kind of, I don't even know if it exists anymore, but you don't see a lot of that even now to this day. I went to one of those at Jennerstown once, where it was Greg Biffle and Kenny Wallace, and Dale Jr. was there. Dale, I don't think, drove that night, but he was there signing autographs, but Biffle and Kenny and a couple other guys ran late models at Jennerstown the one night I happened to be there with the old Mara series. And Lake Erie Speedway used to do that too, when they were a weekly short track. But you don't even see that now. But on the other hand, you do see a lot of NASCAR. You have a handful of drivers that do like to go back and race. Kevin mentions Chase Elliott, who would love to do more of that. But you've got, you know, Kyle Busch. He was running a late model race this weekend, I believe. The Rattler 250. I believe he was running that. But he runs the Snowball Derby in December. He does a lot of that. Matt Kenseth and Eric Jones, a couple of Midwest late model guys. Of course, Kyle Larson doing his stuff with Sprint Cars and the World of Outlaws, and he owns a, you know, World of Outlaws team, and so does Ricky Stenhouse and Casey Kane, who still owns a World of Outlaws team, a very successful one. And now that he's out of Hendrick Motorsports, he may get back into doing some more Sprint Car stuff. And of course, Tony Stewart owns a World of Outlaws team. So there are guys that still like to go back and do it. But obviously, a lot of guys are also hindered by their contracts with their cup teams, that they aren't allowed to go maybe run a midweek show or run a Friday night show somewhere, that they're not even allowed to do that because of their contracts. I remember Tony Stewart, the year he won his first cup championship, he was supposed to run the Race of Champions at Oswego in a modified. And Joe Gibbs said, you're not doing that. And Tony showed up, but they put Kenny Schrader in the modified that night at Oswego. And Tony sat up in the tower and helped spot for Schrader that night. But that's also part of it, too, is these guys are just bound by their cup contracts because, of course, that's where their money comes from. But then you have a handful of guys like that, and then you have guys that do still like to get involved. Denny Hamlin has his short track showdown late model race coming up. I think when the Cup Series is in Richmond next month, he's once again doing his big late model race where he invites big late model stars from the South and also tries to get some NASCAR guys involved. But there is a disconnect, and I don't know at this point if NASCAR can even continue the level of involvement that we saw back in the day with Winston and RJ Reynolds. Can they support their short track program? Can they expand their budget on that? I don't know. Without major a big huge sponsor, they get a lot of support from Whelen, and Whelen does a lot, especially for short tracks in the New England area. They have a lot of ties to that market, and they still sponsor the Modified Tour as well too. But they probably don't have the same budget that maybe RJ Reynolds did back in the day to maybe give those sanctioned tracks money for projects, whether it's new lighting or fencing or a new PA system or just the familiar red and white walls that all the NASCAR sanctioned tracks had back in the day. Probably the level of budget is not there. 803-0551, 888-550-2550. And there was a neat story that came out this week too. Ryan McGee from ESPN.com did a story about this and actually quoted Tim Pakman from Lancaster Speedway. And we actually had pictures from the track featured on ESPN.com, so that was pretty cool. But I think this is good. This is good for it. Maybe doesn't look good for NASCAR, but it looks good for the short tracks. It brings them to attention to an audience that doesn't know about them as much as some fans out there, that they know that there is this program out, that there's these tracks out there that run on Fridays and Saturdays and maybe even midweek shows, and maybe this encourages the fan that just watches from his couch every week. Maybe it gets him more interested to go out and see just a race or two and find that track closest to their home to watch one. Because that's all it takes, is just to get that experience in person just once. I think it hooks someone. So if you're listening to the show and you have a friend that maybe is not a race fan in general or just a NASCAR fan, you know, take them to a local track once the snow melts here in Western New York, in Southern Ontario. Take them to a short track this summer and let them experience what it's like, and that there is a quality motorsports product right in their own backyard, because you have plenty to choose from. For those of you that live in Buffalo or just across the border in Ontario, there is lots of options, lots of great racing out there in this area for short track fans to see. But I thought it was a fun week of conversation. And I did find it interesting, though, that Kevin talked about wanting the K&N series, the East and West series, the old Busch North and Winston West series, wanting them to have more companion races with cup events, whether it's at Phoenix or the one he competed at Sonoma last year on the road course. He talks about that, but he's also famously said that he thinks the trucks should go run more short tracks and they should run less companion events. So I thought it was a little bit contradictory. I tried to tweet at Kevin to see if he'd respond to that, but he didn't, of course, because, you know, it's just a little old me tweeting at him. But I thought that was a little bit contradictory. I mean, you want the K&N guys as a development series to run more companion events, but you want the trucks to go back to the short tracks. Well, why can't the trucks, are the trucks then, are they, what do you want the trucks to be? Do you want them to be a development feeder series, which they've kind of developed into, or do you want the trucks to go back to being their own identity of a series, maybe when they started 20 years ago and they ran the Louisvilles and Flemingtons and Evergreen Speedways of the world, versus having companion races at Daytona and Talladega and some of the mile and a half tracks, of course? You know, do they need to go back into being their own series? And that would be difficult in this day and age, though, too, because that would require, you know, some of these short tracks then to build safer barriers and everything. So it would cost the short tracks themselves, that would cost them a lot of money to have to bring their facilities up to the standard of a NASCAR National Series facility. So who would NASCAR or would a sponsor step in and help those tracks out? So I thought it was a little bit contradictory how he wanted the K&N guys to run more companion events, but he said previously that the trucks should run more short tracks. Both ideas are great. I'm not saying he's wrong. I just would clarify the differences there. But I definitely think the trucks should go back to a schedule where they are at fewer companion events with the Cup Series, and they should run their own events and have their own set of tracks that maybe Cup cars don't go to. It's great they run at Eldora, and the K&N West Series, they're going to run a dirt race this year at Las Vegas, and Kevin talked about that as well, that he had a little bit to do with for that idea to come up for the K&N West cars to go run the dirt track at Las Vegas later this year. So I like events like that where these series that try and create their own identity at their own unique facilities. All right, when we get back, we'll wrap things up here. NHRA is at the Gator Nationals in Gainesville, Florida. We'll talk about that. And if you have any thoughts on NASCAR and their relation to short track racing in America, I'd love to hear your thoughts too. 803-0550. We get back here on Fast Track on WGR.
Hey, this is Ricky Stenhouse Jr., driver the number 17 Fastenal Ford. You're listening to WGR Sports Radio 550.
11:52 here on WGR Sports Radio 550. Dave Buchanan wrapping up this edition of Fast Track. Of course, NASCAR in California, so there are tons of Hollywood tie-ins to the racing weekend. The grand marshal for today's race is the cast of Super Troopers, so I'm looking forward to that. I am of the age that discovered the original Super Troopers movie when it came out, and I'm older now, but I guess I'm kind of looking forward to the sequel. I don't know. It could be total garbage, but it could be really funny like the first one. But they will be the grand marshal today, the cast of Super Troopers. That was one thing. And then yesterday, the Xfinity Series race was called the Roseanne 300, as in, yes, the remake Roseanne T, or not the remake, I guess, the continuation, the return of the show Roseanne with the original cast on ABC. That was the title sponsor yesterday's Xfinity Series race. So Hollywood tie-ins aplenty at Auto Club Speedway. As I said, NHRA is in Gainesville, Florida for the Gator Nationals. Top qualifiers, Clay Milliken in top field, Jack Beckman in funny car, Greg Anderson in pro stock. John Force is having a terrible start to the year. This is the third race in a row where he has had a major incident where he has the engine is blown on his car and the hood of the funny car has gone up and blown apart. And this is the third race in a row this has happened to him. It happened to him in qualifying on Friday, the first two races of the year. It has happened to them. So that's three in a row for 60-year-old John Force where he has had a major blow up on his funny car. It's amazing that he wants to take this kind of punishment at 68 years of age, but he'll have to bounce back, and he has had his struggles here to start the 2018 season. This weekend is also the first event of the year for the Pro Modified category, and Elma's own Mike Janis from Janssen Racing Engines, he qualified number six in Pro Modified. They had a field of over 30 Pro Mods, and he made the field, qualified six overall. Melanie Salemi, another Western New York driver who's got backing from the New Era Cap Company, she signed a partnership with them for this season. Unfortunately, she did not make the field of 16. She qualified 25th and did not able to qualify for the field there in Pro Mod at Gainesville, Florida, but Mike Janis is in, so good luck to Mike, the Lancaster Elma native, and Janssen Racing Engines out there on Transit Road. So hopefully he does well there. He was off in Qatar, actually, about a month ago. He was doing some racing out in the Middle East with, I believe, his teammate, Khalid Al-Balushi. They were out in his home country of Qatar doing some racing out there and setting some records with some Janssen power out there in the Middle East. So he's back in this country, though, and will be racing today in Gainesville, Florida. So enjoy the race today out there in California. We'll see what happens with everybody starting on the fresh tires, and we'll see what kind of... I don't think the teams that failed qualifying will get... I don't know if it'll be more penalties, but we may see some procedural changes, obviously, when it comes to qualifying... going into Martinsville next week. Of course, Martinsville is one of the best races of the year, of course, the short track, not only the cup race, but the trucks will be back in action next weekend for over there in Martinsville, so those will be two must-watch races. Hey, don't forget, along with the race today, the Bandits are in action. They're in Georgia for a 4 o'clock game. That'll be on ESPN 1520 today, of course. Unfortunately, the Bandits on a three-game losing streak. They lost Friday night at home to the Saskatchewan Rush, but my buddy John Gertler is on the call today at 4 from Georgia, and in case you're not on Twitter, some roster notes for the Bandits. Mark Stainhouse has been activated from IR. He had that wrist injury that he's been missed several weeks. He'll be back in the lineup today. Ethan Schott going on the IR due to a hamstring injury. Zach Haywires will be put up on the practice squad, and Zach Higgins will get the start and goal tonight for the Bandits after Alex Bouquet made the start Friday against the Rush. Higgins, of course, played great against the Swarm here in Buffalo earlier this year against his former team, so he'll get the start today as the Bandits look to snap a three-game losing streak and try and stay alive in a very tight East Division playoff race with all five teams in the hunt for those three playoff spots. And so this is a must-win divisional game for the Bandits this afternoon. So that's coming up at 4 o'clock on ESPN 1520. My buddy John Gertler will have the call. We'll be back home March 31st. That's the next home game for the Bandits at the KeyBank Center. And that's when you'll hear me again on a Bandits broadcast. So, and you'll hear from me again next Sunday, of course, right here at 11 o'clock for another edition of Fast Track. So we'll talk to you next Sunday here on WGR.
RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.